The more surprising aspect of this is that Ehang, who makes one of these people carrying drones, they actually took a flight controller out of one of these older drones, and it is the actual brain and flight control.
Wow, that is shocking. Hey, I'm Forrest with Concrete Conversations, and I'm here with Arian.
Hello.
Hello. And we also have Rob and his assistant, Paul, who are on the show today.
I like it.
And So Rob and Paul are here from The Drone U. Now, first of all, let's get to the meat of this. Why the article in front of Drone U? Why not a Drone U? Or undrone you?
Well, we were watching the Social Network movie, and you know, they're in that pivotal scene of like the Facebook drop the. So we're just waiting for our like denouement to drop the, and then it'll be just drone you.
We've been waiting a long time.
That's okay. That's okay. Never gonna come. Takes a long time to look that word up in a French dictionary.
If you look at our logo, it actually is drone you. The only place that the appears is in our URL. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people use it because of that.
But you can always learn at the drone you.
That's right.
You can't. It just, it rolls off of the tongue so easily. Paul says that every coaching call and podcast episode you guys do is the drone you. And well, and you've got your like intro or outro or something is you use I've just heard you say the drone you so much that it's, I guess when I think about it, it's only on the URL that I've ever seen it printed. But that was the most important question we really wanted to get to. So I don't know if we have, Arian, was there much else that we wanted to, did you have another question?
Let's go to lunch.
Yeah. That's it.
I'm kind of out of stuff to talk about now. Did you have any other questions you wanted to bring up?
Let's ask when you guys got this going. This university started. When did that happen?
Go.
It was 1417 AD when we met with Leonardo da Vinci and we realized that multicopters were a thing. No, we got all of this started in 2013. So we just hit our 10-year anniversary late 2013. And I could have that wrong. It might be 2014. I'm not really sure. But long story short is long story short is I was actually doing training for a university and I was doing social media for Rob and his mortgage company. And long story short is I remember coming back to them after a weekend of doing some training and I was complaining about how there was no curriculum and the people didn't actually know how to fly and couldn't provide any like real world helpful tips or anything like that. And I remember he and Tim, our former business partner, were like, well, why don't we start a drone school? And that's kind of how it all started. So
that's right.
So you came to Paul, you came to Rob and just asked, like, could I be your assistant? And that's just, and then
originally,
and now here we are.
The bald head made me think genie, and I knew he could make anything happen. So
make some magic happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Tim's bald as well, so it was...
I was the odd man out.
Double whammy.
Well, Paul, you keep trying. You might get there, buddy. Don't worry.
Oh, don't worry.
Working on it.
What do you think? I'm wearing a hat.
Oh, no, the hat makes it worse, man.
maybe, but you can't see it.
I think that's an old... forgive me, Arian, an old wives' tale.
Old wives' tale, yeah.
The hat thing, yeah.
No, but we've been flying for a long time. We've been helping a lot of people from experience-based information, and we're lucky that we love what we do. So
absolutely,
that's pretty rare that you love what you're doing for this long. I mean, anybody can love what they're doing for an afternoon, but
yeah. So you mentioned that there wasn't much curriculum when you first got started, and that's why you decided to start this. What else did this space look like when you first got started into the drone world? What kind of regulations or was there really anything there? Okay.
It was the Wild Wild West.
It really was the Wild Wild West. Yeah. At the time, the FAA was saying that you needed a 333 exemption to fly a drone, but drones were not actually like classified as aircraft at that point. And so I actually had a bunch of federal investigations against me from the Albuquerque FISDO saying that I was flying drones and making money outside of the regulatory system. But the whole case got dropped because literally they're like, well, as long as you become a proponent of 107, everything will be fine. And literally. And so Part 107 came out in 2016, and we were the first to actually teach on it, and we were the first to have questions and a study guide and all of that. And I would also say not only were we the first, but I still believe the only ones that actually teach from experience. There's a lot of competitors out there that teach Part 107, but most of them are, you know, armchair quarterbacks. So I think that we actually provide a very unique element in that we've created habits and systems of flying these aircraft, unlike really anyone else. And in fact, that became apparent during an FAA meeting called a DAC, a Drone Advisory Committee, where Bill English, who was the lead investigator of the NTSB at the time, said, we need to be thinking about drones in a manned ideological standpoint to apply regulations to them. And he said, the only group who's really doing that has someone sitting at the table. And he pointed at us and essentially was like, it's Drone U. So I really believe that teaching from experience provides like almost an apprenticeship and information that will really help people. So,
well, and that's been my experience, is that I've gone to three of the experience trainings, like in-person experience trainings with you guys, with the Drone U, and being able to just pepper you with just whatever questions we come up with. All the classmates and me, we always get experience-based answers, not just, well, in theory you can do this, or that's a creative idea, let's think about that. It's always, no, this is what I've done, and you even bring up anecdotes of particular projects you've worked on, or even pictures and videos of, see, this is when I did that thing. And that's, as I said in an interview with your team one time, you don't want to be learning drone or any industry. You don't want to be learning from a guy who knows a little bit more than you. You really want to be learning anything from a master. And that makes just such a difference in terms of your confidence in what you're being taught, and also advancement of your abilities, because you're being drawn up to the level of a master by a master, rather than kind of walking along with another dude who, some other schlemiel who doesn't know much.
Well, appreciate that.
Yeah, I will say thank you on behalf of all of our instructors, which does not include me, so I can give the blanket thank you. But certainly the philosophy has been to shorten the learning curve and have other people learn from the obviously experiences as has been articulated here, but even more importantly, the mistakes that come out of those experiences,
failures.
The failures, right? To try to minimize those for the people that do choose to learn from DroneU. And I think that we've been able to do that for a lot of folks, which is exciting.
We have no shortcomings of failures.
No, we don't.
So many failures that we've learned from, but I think failure is some of the best. It's the best teacher, in all honesty, because even if you keep winning consistently, you start to lose the brevity of the win, or the why for the win, or you stop being super self-aware to understand the systems that got you to the win, or the mindset. So I think failure, as much as it's super painful, is probably the best teacher. So.
Well, and that's a great point to go off of here. I mean, with this being the wild, wild west 10 years ago when you guys were just getting into this, there wasn't any clear path. Like, drones are going to play this role in construction or in real estate or in any other industry. And so surely with this just being wide open frontier, surely along the way there were some false starts and some dead ends where that you guys went down, that, or the industry went down, that turned out to just be completely fruitless. What are some of those false starts or dead ends that the industry or drone you went down that you could tell us a little bit about?
I like that question. I think the industry's was 333.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a complete failure.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I mean, I've even been to FAA conferences, been walking down the hall with the FAA administrator, And he literally was like, I really regret ever taking on regulating drones. And he said specifically, I regret taking on the Perker case. And the Perker case was the University of Virginia 2012 case where Raphael Perker was flying a drone essentially all over the university and getting footage for the university. And they said that it was an illegal flight because the drone is quote unquote deemed an aircraft and must follow aircraft regulations that are only given out by the FAA. And I know numerous administrators since that administrator who have said they really regret trying to regulate drones, but I think that has kind of evolved and now they see drone regulation as a necessary step to things like unmanned air mobility, aka like the Uber flying taxis going to the airport, like from where you guys live to say, you know, John Wayne Airport or, you know, LAX Airport. You can just hop in a flying car and pay $50 and get to where you need to go. And I think they see drones as a threat to advanced aerial infrastructure. And so now it's become kind of like a necessary evil for them. But I think that if there was a separate regulatory agency, it might actually be a benefit to the community as a whole, because a lot of these newer regulations that they're putting into place violate other federal regulations. So you're kind of having crossing wires with a lot of this stuff. But
which is a scary thing to say, that we're advocating for another government agency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just prefer no government agency.
I want to keep things
more
positive.
Regulations.
But, right. Exactly.
You're talking to people in California, so yeah, we know all about regulations.
I did get your U-Haul receipt from last week, though. So
yeah. So the so the regulatory environment, that's a really interesting one in terms of the direction this has gone. Do you I know you have to be kind of careful because you don't want to get yourself in the crosshairs of the regulatory agency. You don't want to say something that's going to.
Oh, we've never experienced that.
Are you kidding me? I've been under the microscope.
Okay, good. Well, then it's a free for all. So, what do you think the FAA should be doing differently now? You can't put that genie back in the bottle. So what do you think should be happening now? Also, are you running for election?
Let me go first on this, and then Paul can take it away, because I think the podcast is over, because he can run on this one for the rest of whatever the time is. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I want to say this, though, relative to that particular question and point. I definitely believe that the intentions are solid and that they are actually trying to ensure safe airspace, right? And the way that that's done, who knows if it's the best way. Somebody does. I don't. But I just want to make sure that I make that clear, that I think that is, it's not like there's some sinister plan to get rid of drones, I don't think.
No, but I think it is clear that we are the safest cohorts of pilots to have ever existed. Even the NTSB put out a report saying that just a few years ago. I would second what Rob is saying up until one particular regulation where, you know, there's a very politicized issue right now as far as like using Chinese drones versus American drones. And they don't compete on feature set. They don't compete on pricing. Like, it's almost like if China has Apple and we're making like Research in Motion, like we're making Nokia phones over here while they're making iPhones, to give you kind of an analogy of what we're dealing with. And, you know, the whole problem with security on Chinese drones could literally be fixed by regulating internet out of drones, meaning that there's no connection or conduit for security issues to occur between Chinese drones and the motherland, right? But the FAA just did the opposite and said, let's implement remote ID, and we're going to need your ground control position information, which mostly comes from your phone, which is connected to the internet. So they literally, instead of making drones more secure, they said, oh no, let's connect more drones to the internet. So in all honesty, I think we all understand the reality of the industry as a whole, but it seems like it's turning into the CB radio industry. The CB radio industry, you know, at the very beginning, FCC is like, you have to register every single CB radio in every truck, and you have to do this and give us all this information. And everyone was like, yeah, let's see you enforce it. And so, like, nothing ever came of it, right? And I mean, you can go to Walmart and buy a CB radio right now, and there's no one who's going to tell you to register it or anything that. You just use it and you're done.
Of course, a CB radio isn't going to run into a helicopter.
This is true. So... but it could facilitate logistics.
That's a stretch. That's true, though. That's true.
But no, I mean, like, in all honesty, you know, you talk about false starts. I think that there are a lot of people that are in the industry that wish we could go back in time and regulate things a little differently. Because back in the day, we all got tricked. And Peter, one of our instructors at the time, he called it out. And we got tricked because the FAA was like, don't worry, hobbyists. We're going to leave you alone. We just want to regulate the commercial guys because they're the ones who are going to be taking the risk. Well, a little like that didn't work out at all. Hobbyists have been regulated almost as much as commercial pilots now. And to the extent that the framework of regulation has become such entangled in like a spider-like web that a lot of people just don't get licensed or don't register their drones. I mean, like there's a realtor in my neighborhood who shall go unnamed.
I would imagine this story is true for every neighborhood.
Yeah, there's a realtor in my neighborhood who uses drones all the time for his brokerage. He does not have a license and has never gotten a license since 2016 because he read the FAA expects you to give 90 days advance permission notice to fly in controlled airspace, which we know now with Lance and our immediate authorizations, that's not true, but it is true in some airspace. I mean, airspace down by like where you guys live, there's some very restricted airspace. And, you know, the FAA, a lot of FPV pilots, if you're not familiar, that's like the little small, fast drones that race. A lot of FPV pilots have made the regulatory argument that drones really aren't even, should not be regulated by the FAA because they're not flying in navigable airspace. What is navigable airspace, right? Essentially think of it as the tops of the trees. If a helicopter can't fly through there on a way to a hospital, it's not navigable airspace, right? And so the FAA has ignored that question over and over and over and over again. And so a lot of people are kind of like saying, okay, well, if you're not going to listen to us, if you're not going to answer our questions, why are we going to, you know, see you as an authority? But if you want to be serious in commercial aerospace, you kind of have to. And it's really not that hard to comply, in all honesty. You get your Part 107. It doesn't ever teach you how to fly. That's why I think people like us succeed so much. It's just like a driver's license, right? If you, you know, if you go to Loveland's School of Driving, you know, if it's in New Mexico, they might teach you that if you're turning into three lanes, you can turn into whatever lane that you want to. But if you go to BMW driving school, they're going to tell you right lane into the right lane and your approach angle and where to hit the apex and when to brake and all that. So, you know, it's, I always use that analogy that you might get your driver's license. It doesn't make you a good driver.
Right. Well, and there's so much about, you know, the FAA started out by just regulating manned vehicles, obviously, because that's all there were. I mean, what is the relationship between manned vehicles and unmanned aerial vehicles in terms of the information you have to know, your experience? Do you need to, I know that you know a lot about manned vehicles now, but was that something you knew already, or is that something you just kind of picked up along the way by being in this space?
Well, I thought it was important at the beginning to understand the manned pilot ideology and try to implement that across unmanned systems. And so as a part of the 333, which we initially applied for, it said that you had to go out and get a private pilot's license. You could, the cheapest way was balloons, but I don't know anyone who wants to be in a vehicle that you can't steer, so that wasn't for me. But powered parachute or helicopters was a great way to do it. And so, in all honesty, I always thought that if you can transpose the normal manned pilot ideology into unmanned systems, that it would essentially be successful. Now, you know, that said, the FAA sees manned and unmanned pilots in two very different cohorts, but I think it's actually a factor of decisions that they made, because history has repeated itself with drones. And everyone knows the Wright brothers. Everyone knows Kitty Hawk. Everyone knows that they first took flight in the United States. But they never sold their first aircraft in the United States because of the regulatory mess and the United States government trying to impede their ability to do so. So they sold their first plane in France. And drones were kind of the same thing here. You know, they really tried to enact all these regulations and, you know, have limited beyond visual line of sight operations, drone delivery. Meanwhile, Zipline, an American company, is operating in Africa, having done 70,000 flights of drone delivery and really advancing aerospace as you would expect tech to be advanced here in the United States. But I think that we've just hit an evolution of the industrial complex where regulation has superseded innovation. And I think that this is a perfect example of such.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So when you first started, compared to where things are right now, what's something that has surprised you how the industry has evolved over the last 10, 15 years? Or is there anything that has surprised you?
I think there's a
are
lot.
Are you surprised? Do you get surprised?
Do you get surprised?
how do I answer that nicely?
Yeah, you know, it's like a lot of things in terms of technology. The speed at which new options and possibilities come about is pretty incredible. It actually puts a lot of pressure on us to make sure that we're keeping all the content and education and training up, which I'm glad there's somebody like Paul and the rest of our trainers in the crew, because they're able to do that. So I guess even in light of the fact that technology moves so fast, and we all know that, I'm still surprised at how fast, like what drones can do in terms of multiple cameras, multiple sensors, and it's pretty amazing. I'm not going to be able to get technical about it, but he can. So that's something that's pretty amazing. I think, honestly, one of the things that's surprising to me is how slow it's taken some industries to latch on. So for example, in the construction business or the construction industry, we've got some clients who, one of which you've met, Forrest, at the last experience training, he gets it and he's going deep, right? But I think he's the exception for some strange reason.
Yeah.
And it just gives him an advantage. So that surprises me.
Yeah.
But I guess we're just afraid to change as a humanity.
I would say the biggest surprise to me is that I had no idea how drones would be such a weaponized tool. Like, most people think of drones as they take photos, they shoot great videos, and you can make maps and models with them, right? But few people, I mean, after the Ukraine war, we're now seeing just the impact of small drones. I mean, DOD has a contract out right now that they're literally trying to hire people to make drones that cost less than $5,000, and they'll give you $5 billion to go out and go make these drones, because the most disposable, easy to use tool that can have a massive impact in war, especially on the modern battlefield, are these small drones. I mean, I just posted a video yesterday on Instagram saying, where is the future of drone jobs? And I'm afraid that if we go further into war because of our bumbling president, that we might actually end up where drone pilots are contracted with the military to say, hey, look, you can fly remotely from here in Vegas or here in California, but we need you to fly a drone to essentially go bomb these personnel that are on the other side of the battlefield. And so I say my biggest surprise is I never realized the impact that small sub 2 kilogram drones would have on the battlefield, and how the innate skill of flying close, flying low, flying smooth would matter so much for dropping an RPG from a Mavic Pro. You know, I never thought that was really going to be a thing.
Yeah, Tony Stark is real.
Super real. Yes. So.
Well, and so, I mean, and on that note, I mean, in terms of the future of drone jobs, you just touched on that, but I mean, is there a sector of the greater drone industry, which touches many individual industries, is there a sector of that that you think you're seeing as a clear front runner in terms of adoption and innovation for the utilization of unmanned aerial vehicles?
One thing that comes to mind for me is, believe it or not, public safety. I think that we're seeing, for example, law enforcement agencies in particular, they seem to really be doing a good job of adopting and adopting fairly quickly at this stage.
Yeah, same with fire, I would say as well. Mm-hmm. I would say number one behind that is probably construction, but if you were to aggregate it to a wider field, as you mentioned, Forrest, I think anything that involves engineering, because of the aging infrastructure, the infrastructure bill, you know, the need to index all of our physical assets in a digital world, And how drone mapping is like, you know, and photogrammetry is the leading edge of exactly that. I think, you know, we're now seeing, and we're getting requests to train government entities on doing drone mapping inside of Esri. And Esri is like a very old platform that many departments and governments, and I'm sure Forrest, you have used to essentially visualize any geospatial data. So like Rob said, I think the biggest surprise is the slowing maturity of the industry and how long it's taking to get to full utilization. And I think we're only at 10%, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. But it does seem the barriers are coming down.
Yeah, yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
For example, anything, I'm sorry, Forrest, to cut you off there, anything that requires a human being to go up in the air, even attached to a building or a ladder or something, though, I think that's something where adoption is speeding up very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say another...
For obvious reasons.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah, I would say, honestly, it's really surprising how the market has moved overall from the regulations to the people flying drones to how serious it's being taken to how we're viewed as pilots. And now we're seen as a potential national treasure. I mean, if you read some of the intelligence reports coming out of the government, they are trying to scoop up drone pilots hand over fist right now. So it's becoming a very, very important and needed thing. But I would say the most surprising thing that I've ever seen in this industry, and this might be news to Rob, but you know, we're seeing all these unmanned air mobility drones, right? These drones that actually carry people from places. In fact, you can buy a Jetson 1 right now, actually in your backyard, and it's $100,000. It can fly you for 25 minutes. And when we talk about the analogy of the regulatory space, you do not need an FAA license to fly that sub 200-pound aircraft, but you need a license to fly this. So, you know, if that doesn't paint the picture of the regulatory environment, I don't know what does. The more surprising aspect of this is that Ehang, who makes one of these people carrying drones, they actually took a flight controller out of one of these older drones, and it is the actual brain and flight control for a
really
human carrying drone. Yes.
Wow. That is shocking.
And, a really but good there's flight no, controller.
For the Jetson 1 and for these things, they don't have, there's no sort of licensure required there at all, huh?
No, it's called Part 103, and it's fully experimental, and you don't need any license whatsoever. Isn't that
shocking.
Yeah. Like, I can literally fly something the size of my truck, no license, but to fly this and capture photos for your local church is going to require almost a $200 test and an examination by the FAA. Have that make sense?
So I guess I don't even realize that these unmanned aircrafts that can carry people were a thing. So this is just all surprising to me that they're not licensed or that there's not as many regulations for that type of drone work.
It's crazy.
That is,
there's not a lot of them in the U.S. yet, though.
No, I was
where,
so grateful.
Where are those? What countries is that in?
Oh, well, like Saudi, places like that, maybe.
Yeah, okay. Dubai, the Emirates, okay. Africa, South America. You can fly them pretty much anywhere. But even here in the United States, you can fly them anywhere as long as it's not in controlled airspace. So,
I saw a video of a guy who's as you said, Paul. He's here in SoCal, and he's got a Jetson 1, and it was just this little 5-minute video watching him fly around and doing a little walk around, a little tour of his little thing, and he's got a little like landing pad there next to his house, and it's pretty wild. I don't know if it was the Jetson 1, but it was. I mean, if I remember the picture, I think that it looked just like one, but yeah, it was nuts.
There's so many now; it's crazy. There's Joby, there's Jetson, there's Ehang. Like, it's unbelievable how many of them that there are. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's actually not a good name if you think about it. So.
Yeah. I personally am partial to Jetson. Having grown up with the Jetsons.
Yeah, who wouldn't love to fly, to fly a Jetson after watching the Jetsons as a kid?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
I think that the bigger question with the unmanned air mobility, though, is like, are the same technology that power drones, like props on an electric motor, Are those the things that's really going to be propelling the future of aviation?
Ooh, Paul's about to go deep.
And I don't think that it is. Yeah. So I really don't believe that that's going to be the answer whatsoever. I think you're going to see exoskeleton style aircraft that have a hull that can be filled with like a xenon gas. And then you essentially use microwave emitters to control the state of change between a gas and a plasma, and that's your propulsion. So I think what we're going to see in aviation over the next 20 years is going to be bonkers. So
that was a different direction than I was going, because we were just talking about the Jetsons. So I went to Flintstones, and I was like, you're right, man. I bet it's going to be a pterodactyl. That's how we're going to get around. I mean, that makes the most sense. But either that, either pterodactyls or like xenon gas plasma. Yeah, one of those two. Maybe xenon plasma powered pterodactyls. Should write some of this stuff down. Anyway,
it's being recorded.
Yeah, I think that. Oh yeah, we're good. Yeah, we're perfect. Yeah, the future of some of this stuff is really interesting. Do you think that does it feel like obviously we're talking about mostly the U.S. here, because if you can't tell from our accents, that's where all of us are from. But we've got this regulatory agent or environment here that's generally speaking in the U.S. More strict than other places, and it very much guides where things can go. You know, innovation and regulation are happening in tandem, sometimes one leading the other, but they're very tied together in the U.S. Do you think that there's a possibility that genie might go back in the bottle a little bit and say, you know what, this was maybe a misstep of us over-regulating this. Let's take a step back. Very non-government-like. They generally don't take steps back. They generally say, why aren't we buckling down on this more? Let's get on this. What do you think the regulatory relationship is going to be with innovation in the drone industry?
Can I hit this one?
I'll just say I would. This pulls me into cynicism. So yeah,
really?
You please go.
Well, I think it's. I think the regulate. I think. I like it. I think that the genie being put back in the bottle could absolutely happen, because the regulatory environment is crippling the United States right now. I mean, you know, that we talk about, you know, not using DJI drones or Chinese drones, but there is no domestic competitor that competes on feature and price. And it's also, you know, kind of hand and foot like scenario, because the U.S. government, through Ukrainian funding, is literally buying 60% of the entire manufacturing capacity from DJI. So while they're telling public safety, don't fly DJI to save someone's life, you know, the U.S. government is now buying literally 6 out of all 10 drones made by the largest manufacturer in the world. And so I think as the Ukrainian war begins to break down, and as other wars pop up, I think the U.S. government is going to realize they made a cripplingly bad decision in over-regulating this, in over-regulating supply chains, in over-regulating and playing this tit-for-tat political fighting with China. I think they're going to realize they made a massive mistake, because we don't have any manufacturers at scale here domestically. And number two, with there being such a huge regulatory burden compared to other, you know, allied countries, you know, I think that they are going to roll things back. I think that that could absolutely happen. I mean, just look at Canada. You know, Canada was really strict about drone stuff up until, I think it was like 2018 or 2019, and they completely changed the regulatory framework to where if you're flying a sub 250 gram drone, you don't need a license. You don't need to file for anything. You know, you just can't fly it within a couple of miles of an airport, like a really simplistic system of essentially saying that, like, hey, if your drone weighs less than 250 grams, we don't really see it as a threat or a problem. So just don't fly it within so many miles of an airport and you're fine.
So we should move to Canada.
No. I would say the tax.
There's some beautiful places in Canada.
Really beautiful, places in Canada. But I would say the tax environment is not. Well, it's similar to California, so.
It is. Well, but then you've got the added, look, I've got great friends in Canada, but You'd have to start saying things like project and process.
A boot.
These are all things that just, I mean,
yeah. Unacceptable.
I just have some hills that I'm willing to die on, and that's one of them. So,
I mean, you'd be really good at playing the game Sorry, you know?
Sorry. Look, all right, that's Canadian friends. You guys do it to us too, but man, Sorry, I have a hard time with Sorry. That one gets me every time. So anyway, Canadians are wonderful. Canadians are wonderful. We love you guys.
We love you. They're 100%. So nice.
They're so nice.
Anthony, cool. Thinking of you.
Yeah, they are actually very nice.
So we've been talking a lot about stuff that established drone pilots maybe thinking about regulatory environments in the future of this stuff and like Paul's hairline and all these types of things. But we also have there are plenty of guys who are really interested in this. I mean, you strap anything to a drone and it automatically becomes cool. And so who doesn't want to be doing something cool? So we've got tons of people who are interested in getting into drones. What have you seen in terms, I mean, you've trained thousands of pilots. What have you seen in terms of the things that pilots can do that will either sabotage or be a springboard for their drone career?
Well, first and foremost, I think that how you handle problems is going to dictate your success. If I were to literally whittle it down to one thing, and what I mean by that is that a lot of like flying drones and the software hardware combination force, as you know, can often yield surprising glitches and problems. And you've got systems built on older systems that when newer systems get renewed, older systems are phased out, even sometimes accidentally. And so I think how you handle frustration and problem solving is going to be the quintessential driver of your propensity for success. Meaning, when you have problems, are you going to face them with, okay, let's slow things down. I know it's easy to get upset and frustrated and angry, but can we systematically isolate whatever the potential problem is, overcome the problem, and keep flying? Because I think in today's society, you just see a lot of really sensitive, really impetuous, really impatient people. And I'm sure Rob would advocate that I am that person at times too. So
I wasn't going there.
That's true. But I mean, if you can have an attention to detail, you have a childlike love for flight, but you can prioritize safety and systems over fun, and you can always handle adversity with grace, I think you're going to be really successful. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's funny because you sort of described what I was going to say, and that is to not be arrogant. Yeah. To come into it with humility that the learning never stops, right? So the learning curve is never going to flatten out. Of course, that's life. And I think the people that we see that are dedicated to continuing to learn, and I think people that are good with people, the reality is it's still a relatively new industry, and so there's a lot of new people coming in and out of it, and it's new industries, just a lot new happening on a daily basis. And so being able to absorb that and be flexible and humble and enjoy the process. The people that we see that are doing all those things, they find a way to be successful.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. I don't think I've ever said this publicly, i.e. a podcast, maybe I have, but having been in a couple of different professional environments, and I think this is already changing, but certainly early, the first 5 years of Drone U, that I found the drone industry to be the least professional by far I had ever been a part of. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and I'll stop myself from going into those reasons. But I think that that's changed, and my point there as well is if you can just be a professional person, you have a leg up in a lot of ways, right?
Seriously.
And I think that's true for any industry, obviously, but when it's sort of systemically unprofessional, it's even more true. And I think that's where the drone industry's been. And I say that having experienced that in a not fun way often. But again, I think that's changing a lot.
I think a lot of the people who are unprofessional are also being weeded out.
Exactly.
In addition to the egotists, I think a lot of, in the beginning of this industry, a lot of companies were driving the boat or the vehicle on regulatory protocols, and many of those companies don't even exist anymore. And so I think the drone industry has also fallen prey to lobbyists. I call them the Beltway Bandits. They're the people who have worked in an industry for like 1 or 2 years, and then they just consult for the rest of their life, so they really have no real world experience to give you great opinions. And I feel like the drone industry has fallen prey to lobbying and to you know, DC influence. As someone who grew up in DC, I know how this game is played. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the people in the private industry understand the lack of knowledge, the lack of real world experience, and the lack of proverbial backbone for a lot of our regulators, that they know that they can essentially squeeze certain things out of our government on our different departments because of a lack of knowledge. And I think the drone industry has really been hurt by that, especially with domestic manufacturers. So back to your question of like, do you think the genie will ever get back in the bottle? I think it's already so bad. And when we have a crisis happen that we really need a lot more drone stuff, and I think we're already seeing this right now, it's just not in the news yet, because again, DOD is putting out contract after contract after contract of just saying, we desperately need small UAS and we need it now. So
to go along with what we're talking about here, with people trying to get into this industry, and so with getting into this industry, what's one example of misinformation that someone might come to your university and say, like, hey, this is all over the internet, this is something that everyone's saying. What's something that you're like, please don't do that, or that's just totally wrong? Can you give us an example of that?
Well, again, with the evolution of regulations, they've kind of pulled some things back. So for a very long time, it was like, don't fly over people, right? And now you can transverse people, and that's legal. You can fly over groups of people if you have a sub 250 gram drone with prop guards. So honestly, I think the regulatory environment might be making it more confusing. But the one thing that I always try to tell newer people is everyone has this like innate curiosity for like, how fast can your drone go? How high can it fly? Can I see through the windows of my neighbor's house? It's like, no, 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 you know? So I always tell people, like, don't fly below the tree line of any of your neighbor's homes and you'll probably be okay. So I would say that's my number one. Yeah, what about you?
Oh, man. That's a good question. I don't really have a great answer. I try to stay away from a lot of that stuff, the social media and the things. Just focus on what we're doing.
Yeah.
And all the hats that Paul makes me wear. I don't know. I really don't get involved in that side of things.
I'd like to buy you a Kangol store so that each day you can put on a new hat to represent the job that you're taking.
I don't know what a Kangol is, but it sounds fun.
The old British like hats, you know, they like come down to like, I don't know how to.
Oh.
Like the king.
Sounds like Paul needs to start a Kangol store. You know all about what those are. I mean,
yeah, right.
Yeah. Something's happened there.
I know what I'm buying you for Christmas now.
Well, so, and you guys just recently relocated to mine and Arian's home state, which is Colorado.
Yeah, why aren't you all here anymore? What?
Yeah, seriously, yeah. Solid question. I mean, why aren't you here?
We ask ourselves that all the time. One of these days.
And we always answer that question with, well, we have a successful company in Southern California. So that's when either the company stopped being successful.
Time to open up a satellite office.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Colorado has many redeeming qualities that, you know, California is actually, if you ignore the cost of living and the politics, I don't care if you're on the left or the right or upside down or right side up. I don't know many people who like the politics of California either way. So if you ignore cost of living, the cost of real estate, the cost of everything, cost of food, fuel, all these things, and you ignore the policy. If you ignore everything man-made, California is amazing.
You know what? I would agree, and Paul doesn't really agree with me on this anymore. I won't speak for him in terms of his perspective on California, but My son lives there. My son and daughter-in-law live in Oceanside, and I think Oceanside is super cool. I love going to that area and spending time there. But back to Colorado, we are so glad to be here. Absolutely love it here.
The quality of life is off the charts. So, and I will say, I think San Diego, near where his son lives, is probably the most beautiful city in all of America, in all honesty. But after being involved in a 14-year-long legal battle because of judges' incompetence, I will say that I literally try to go out of my way to not spend money in California. So I'll just put it that way. So,
and when the but other than that, it's great.
When the quality of life is 100 here, why go anywhere else? So.
The why is because your family lives there, but yeah.
And that's right, because I've got a wife and kids here, and so there's something something keeps
sounds
me here.
Sounds like she's ready to go. I'm just throwing
it out. Yeah, there she is. Yeah.
Might leave him here.
The kids are not. We talk with the kids every once in a while about, hey, you know, because we've moved a lot in our marriage, and we asked them. I asked them recently, like, hey, so where should we move next, you guys? I mean, Colorado or Wyoming or Alaska? I mean, what do you think? And most of them are, we've been 5 years in California. So this is the longest we've ever lived any place. And our oldest is 13. So all of our kids have spent most of their, they've never lived in one place this long. This is home for them. So we try to visit Colorado as often as we can. So we make sure that they get a little bit of Coloradofication into their blood there too. But, it's just really interesting because growing up, we never thought that we would be Californians. And frankly, there are a lot of great things about California. We've got snow, we've got mountains, we've got beaches. It's a beautiful place. The weather is amazing. I'm a gardener. I have an 11-month growing season. So, I mean, we are still harvesting strawberries and pumpkins and cantaloupe. So, I mean, not to brag, but when was your cantaloupe harvest? When did that end, Paul?
Well, out in Rocky Ford, they...
but yeah, Rocky Ford, they've got a lot of pumpkins or a lot of cantaloupe out there.
I had a teammate. I played baseball in college, and I had a teammate whose family was in Rocky Ford, and they farmed cantaloupe. They made a lot of stinking money farming cantaloupe, let me just say that. But I've never grown one, so I can't speak to that.
I could give you like 1,000 San Marzano tomatoes, but other than that, I'm kind of limited, so.
Paul, we all need to know one other thing, too. We need to understand what this means.
Thumbs up, buttercup?
Thumbs up, buttercup.
So thumbs up, buttercup essentially means, do we have a remote around here?
That is a Paulism right there.
Yeah, it is. It's actually very practical as well.
So here we have a brand new DJI remote. Okay, here's a brand new DJI remote. And we say thumbs up, buttercup. Obviously, I'm holding the remote with my index fingers because I'm having the remote face you. But if I was holding it, I'd obviously have my thumbs on the sticks. But thumbs up, buttercup essentially means if you're going to hit something, you feel like you're going to hit something, thumbs up on the left stick. Because you can't hit something if you fly over it. So if you're starting to get panic, like, ah, my hair's not growing anymore, you can obviously, you know, thumbs up, buttercup, and fly right over it. So
that helps.
And it doesn't help.
I mean, is that doesn't help? No, Rob doesn't. Oh,
it's not helpful at all. I've tried it over and over and over again because Paul says to do it, but
it just ends up giving me more and more haircuts.
If things start freaking out on you, just put the sticks up.
That's it.
Thumbs up, buttercup. So the other we've been building kind of to this question, and this is really the most important question here is what role do drones and drone paraphernalia play in your decoration of your home?
We actually used to have a Y6.
We've got, that plays a big role here. We've got an M600 there. And do you see that guy? You see this one right here?
Yeah, we're still looking at vertical. Oh, the Phantom Obsidian.
It's an Obsidian. Yeah. Obsidian. Those are, I mean, you know. So let's move on. And then we also have, we even have curtains in here, drone curtains. See that? That's a beaut, isn't it? All right, it's a.
There's a landing pad.
I've got a landing pad for a curtain. Yeah. So, you know, it's the way we roll. Arian doesn't let me put these things outside of this office, but I mean, how much does drone and drone talk come into family life for you guys? Is this a, you know, you're both married, you both have wives at home. What do you,
Well, according to the IRS, we talk about it at every dinner.
That's funny. That's really funny.
Okay. That's amazing. Rob, same thing there?
Well, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, same thing in the British home.
We're not crazy. We allocate a little bit of time every night. You know, it's funny. We don't talk about it much. I've tried, I wonder if this is true for you, Forrest, because I've tried to get all of my kids, my oldest is now 21, my youngest is 14. None of them have been, and I have five, none of them have been interested in flying drones.
Oh, that's interesting.
Really unfortunate. Yeah. Apparently, I'm not a good salesman.
That is a plan of mine, is I'm thinking like, hey, look, drones are kind of a cool thing. Like, maybe the kids will be interested in doing some drone stuff with me one day. And you're kind of crushing my little dreams here.
You know, don't let that happen. I've seen a lot of father-son, father-daughter combos, mother-son, mother-daughter, let's be fair here, out flying. So, yeah, it's very possible.
I would actually argue that women have an advantage for learning how to fly smoothly and have a creative eye. I've noticed it, and I would say only maybe like 7 to 8% of all of our students of all time. Like, I've never had more than 3 females in a course at any given time ever. And what I would say is they have an advantage over being able to visualize a flight line, a storyline, etc., to be able to create that cinematic motion and whatnot. I think that's actually a very real thing. Mm-hmm. I think men sometimes think more linearly. And I don't know. I don't want to be a generalist or an absolutist because we talk about that all the time. Because there's really not one type of person or one type of female or one type of male. But
I know what you're saying, though.
It's yeah, cool. I think there is an innate advantage, just like there's innate advantages between males and females and other things. So.
Do you fly, Arian? Do you all?
Forrest has had me fly a few times. It kind of terrifies me, honestly. So I haven't done it a whole lot.
Yeah, but do you enjoy it, I guess, is the question.
I think
you said it terrifies me. So.
Yeah,
I think I don't like getting scared. Right now, I'm just so scared of crashing this really expensive thing that it's kind of overshadowing the fun part of it.
Cool. You need to get her a little mini SE or something for it.
Yeah, something that I can just mess around with. Maybe that would work.
Just something, a little small thing. Well, and on thedroneu.com, and it's thedroneu.com, they have a don't crash course. And you take that don't crash course, and at the end, they have you something that Paul and Rob both signed to guarantee that you'll never crash. So that was that. I'm trying to remember if that was... That was on there, right? Did you guys take that down? It's still there?
I'll have to go check that later.
Yeah, I think we might have removed that due to a couple lawsuits, but...
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, speaking of, so you guys do have a website. What are other ways that someone can get a hold of you or learn more about what you guys do and what you have to offer?
We post a lot on Instagram and LinkedIn. So if you're on Instagram, it's @thedroneu. And if LinkedIn, it's just linkedin.com/DroneU. I think we relate to our audiences best on those platforms. We will be expanding to other ones here soon.
And also our podcast, which we've been doing for a long time, and you can catch that on all the normal channels and YouTube.
Yep, and Spotify.
Ask DroneU.
That's right. I'm a regular listener on Ask DroneU. That's of the Ask Drone U podcast. That's great. You guys cover a lot of, you cover a lot of interesting topics that are happening right now. Like, hey guys, did you see what happened? What came out? The FAA just made this announcement yesterday. Or, hey, did you see this new Cinewhoop drone? And that's just that's very helpful just to be able to stay. If you stay up to date with that podcast, you stay up to date with the industry. And it's very, very, very helpful.
Mm. Well, cool. Appreciate that. And appreciate being able to be on your show.
Yeah,
too,
we really appreciate the invite. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, thanks you guys for being on here, Paul and Rob from The Drone U. And this is Forrest and Arian with the Concrete Conversations podcast, reminding you that no success can compensate for failure in the home. Don't be a failure.
And don't forget to like and subscribe so that we can bring more great content to you in the future.